passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Hey, welcome back. As we continue, a number of guests will continue to come by. We are going to try to get some calls here because we have not really been able to do that all afternoon. And this is a call-in show. I realize when we're at events like this, we end up speaking a lot to a number of guests, but that's part of the draw of being here. But we certainly always enjoy taking your phone calls. And the number is 855-242-7285. Josh Pate will be by here in just a moment. Are we going to bring Josh on now? We're gonna have Josh in a minute. Let's try Rick first in Knoxville. Hey, Rick, go right ahead.
Hey, sir, how are you doing this afternoon?
We are doing great, thank you.
Awesome. It's sad to see that Tennessee is winning out again. But my question to you is, as far as this NIL program, how do we justify paying these athletes when they're already getting a free degree? They get free housing, free food, and free medical. How do we justify that?
Well, we justify it because it's the law right now, Rick, in Tennessee, where you live, and everywhere else.
Yes,
it is a state law, and it is perfectly legal, and it's also a necessity. Without it, you're not going to get those players.
Well, that's true.
So,
that's
whether you like it or not, you know, Nick Saban can say what he said, and you can say what, and I can agree with both of you. And if we're running the University of Tennessee and we say, you know, guys, you're getting enough, they'll say thank you very much. The players will be gone the next hour. Hey, thanks so much for the call. Josh Pate.
No problem, sir.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it. Josh Pate joining us from Late Kick, one of the most successful podcasts on college football in America. Josh, it's great to see you again. And this guy just didn't like NIL, and he said, why do we have to do it? I guess I tried to answer as nicely as I can, but I don't think the football program would last too long if they decide to say, you know, we really think you're getting enough.
I've been running into this all week. So you realize folks like us are just in the weeds, and we're reading every update from the Dellingers and the Thamels out there. And then you realize there is an entire world of people, like 99% of people who actually love this sport. They're out there working 9-to-5 jobs. They don't keep up with all of it, and they just have basic frustrations like that. And so, you know, you have to go back to square one. You got to go back to chapter one of the book and remind folks it may not be ideal, but this is why it has to be the way it is right now. But man, like, what a week you've probably had on this show, and what a week we've had in the entire world of trying to make sense of all this, and then trying to figure out, okay, well, what is actually in the best interest of the sport? And also, and this is something we could probably spend the rest of the day on, the decision makers in the room. Do they even care about the same things I care about? Do they care about the same things you care about? And, man, I don't know if you've had an easy answer for that. I hadn't had an easy answer for that.
There really isn't. We had a gentleman on a few minutes ago who's a prominent businessman, Gordon Whitener, and he's in the middle of all this, and he said, we have to do something now. And I agree with him, but we're not doing anything about it right now.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if there's any way to undo it because of the ineptitude of the arrogance of the NCAA for too long.
I'll tell you what's tough is, you know, I listened to Nick Saban when he went up on Capitol Hill. I've listened to a lot of administrative types and coaching types in college football. And honestly, Paul, I've thought they've made some really good points, but probably in a too little too late kind of fashion. Number one, because action wasn't taken several years ago, okay? And that's what you're talking about. But also, you know, as much as I have my own ideas and you have your own ideas of what a perfect college football world looks like, and maybe some of these guys are articulating things along those lines, the other side of the fence where there are detractors who argue against that and argue that, hey, the way we're going is the way it should go, they're not making bad points when they say, these folks in the coaching world are chasing every dollar. These folks are mercenaries. They don't care about tradition. They don't care about the integrity of this or that. They don't care about stability. Conferences are chasing every dollar they can. They don't care about stability. So why should the players? And when I've been met with that argument, I've just kind of had to cede it and lean back and say, you make a decent point. I still stand by what I'm saying, but if you're saying it sounds hypocritical for those groups to be the ones calling it out, I can immediately push back on that.
What's also interesting, Josh, is we had Commissioner Sankey on a few minutes ago, and you know, he's literally at the table of all these conversations, but he also said that the fans care about the games, and I know there's a dichotomy there, but I mean, these people in this arena, the people that you run into on Saturdays when you're out every single week, they may hate what they see on Monday through Friday, but they love the games.
It's what I've had the toughest time with. So ratings are big right now. Viewership's big right now. Interest in the game is really big right now. My theory on what is great about college football is spirit. I think that's what's great about college football. I think the biggest selling point of our sport is not that there is superior athleticism on the field to what you would see the next day on Sunday. It's the spirit, and you can define that however you want to. I worry, not in the short term, that viewership's going to wane, because audience patterns, as you well know, are always well downstream of decisions that get made, sure, sometimes years downstream. What I worry about is if you're sacrificing what the public at large would define as the spirit of college football, is there a tipping point? Does the seesaw start to swing to where you see mass groups of people do what they did with pro wrestling, do what they did with NASCAR?
Right.
Is college football immune to that? Because there's been no other form of entertainment in the history of this world that's been immune to that. I think it would be very short-sighted to think college football is immune to that. That would be my biggest concern. I don't know when that happens. I don't know what the tipping point is.
Well, what's interesting about NASCAR, and I used to cover it, is that the old guard was turned off by where it was going, and I don't know if they came back. Now, college football is a little bit different, because it's one thing if you're a Dale Jr. fan or a senior fan or anyone. That college football, you're tied to your school,
yeah,
and the players are always going to change.
Hold on. I know it's unprofessional to just sit here in silence, but I gather thoughts a lot, because I have a lot of things that we have broached today and we've broached in the past year where I definitely see both sides of an argument. Portal's been that way. NIL's been that way. The overall 50,000-foot trajectory of the game has been that way. Because the other thing that I've tried to guard against is just demonizing all the conference commissioners and university presidents, because I am not blind to the fact that there are things like House versus NCAA out there that will not be a ripple. It will be a tsunami in the world of college athletics, whether there's a settlement or whether that thing goes all the way through trial. And I know someone may be on the hook for a whole heck of a lot of money, more than you and I have ever seen in our lifetimes. It ends with a B, like not an M. And so, you know, I understand. I'm not blind to the fact that when you're sitting in that negotiating room, if you're Tony Petitti, if you're Greg Sankey, there are a million things on the table in front of you. That doesn't change the fact that holistically, if I'm just a college football fan, I can be understanding of that and still displeased that it ever got to this point, I guess.
We're talking to Josh Pate. I want to take a break, because I'm going to do something that you will not like. I want to talk about you.
All right.
Because I am, you know what a big fan I am of yours. I've talked to you off the air about how you've been able to do it. And it I think it's one of the more intriguing stories in media, because our guest here literally, I mean, it was, you had nothing going for you, right?
I was down in Columbus, Georgia, listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show on internet radio on WJOX. That's what I was doing.
But and you were able to show perseverance, to believe in yourself, bet on yourself. It's a cliche, but it's actually a pretty safe thing that we talk about a lot. I want to talk about Josh Pate, how he ended up going from what you just got through describing, being beyond rock bottom, I think, and becoming one of the people that matter in this college football platform. We'll take a short break. We are live in Nashville.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And welcome back. We are here in Nashville talking to Josh Pate. So Josh, okay, let's talk about the Josh Pate story. You're in Columbus, Georgia, doing what?
Man, what year you want to go to? We can go back to graduating high school, working at a fabric warehouse, couple of semesters at Columbus State University. There's several prologues to that Josh Pate story, but I'll tell you where it kind of gets interesting is always loved college football now, and always had like a strange fascination with your world. Like I always had a strange fascination with the broadcast side of sports media. Now, I thought I could do it, but everyone thinks they can do it. And so I had no training. I had no relatives in the business. And honestly, Paul, when I left high school, I was one of those tweener kind of kids that certainly didn't grow up rich by any stretch, but it didn't grow up dirt poor and therefore understanding, man, I'm the only shot my family has. And so go to college, don't really know what I want to do. And so I know I'm wasting money. I do know that. So I leave. I didn't call it dropping out. I intended to go back, but worked in a fabric, worked some construction down there, but worked in a fabric warehouse for a little while down in Columbus and would listen to morning talk, would listen to local afternoon drive, would listen to you in the evening, and just realized I'm not 18 anymore now. We're talking about mid-20s. We're getting towards late 20s. After that comes 30s, and then it's come to 80s. You just go right to the 80s. And I would just badger the program director down there at the local ESPN radio affiliate. Could I please come in and watch? I've never seen live production in my life in person. And Bobby Roblowski was his name. He was a big-time FM DJ back in the day. He's working sports talk in Columbus at the time and lets me in there 2 months in. His co-host called in sick really last minute. So he just tossed me on air. And it's afternoon drive, and it's caller-based. It's formulated loosely after a show that was emanating out of Birmingham, Alabama at the time that you've probably heard of. And I loved it so much, man. It was so authentic. It was so real. It was the middle of college football season in the South. And they never took me off air. I loved it enough and kind of found my sea legs enough to where they never took me off air. And a couple of years later, a television general manager by the name of Drew Rhodes hit me up from the NBC affiliate and said, hey, I listen to you every day. You've never heard of me. I listen to you every day. And we'd love to do something over here that is a television version of what you already do. Would you be interested? And started doing it over there and became a sports anchor, became a regular news anchor over there. But I knew, man, around the 20 teens, like the mid-20 teens, when those social platforms like YouTube and Facebook, when they started adding live mechanisms, it was like a multiple Berlin Wall moment for people like me, because overhead and distribution were the barriers to that point,
right,
that made sure, man, I probably have very little shot in that business. But all of a sudden, when overhead and distribution is in your hand, then if you're ready to bet on yourself, and you're any good at what you do, the market's going to let you know, and the market will react. And the market reacted, and I realized local news anchoring is not what I want to be doing. I want to be doing a version of what some of these guys do. And so we started a national show. We were just doing it out of Columbus, Georgia, and they didn't like it, nor should they, because it was on their time and on their dime. But I got to the end of that contract and negotiated to work 1099 for them. I remain their news anchor, but since I'm not employed there anymore, it's okay. And I ask him, can I just get this studio three nights a week? I want to do a YouTube channel. You guys probably don't even know what that is at that time, but I'm going to do a YouTube channel. I want to do my own show. And we did it, and it scaled pretty quick. And LSU in 2019 really helped me. LSU and that run in 2019 really helped. And we got traction outside of the Columbus market for the first time. And it wasn't too long after that that Shannon Terry, who is now over at On3, but was at the time at 24/7 and CBS, called me up and said, we don't even have anything like you're doing. Would you just move to Nashville and do that here? And I said, absolutely. And came here, and COVID set in immediately after that.
Wow.
But you'll remember, during that time, there was like a great divide in sports media of some people who just stuck in the lane they hang out in, and then other folks got out of that lane. And the side effect of that was it alienated some audience. And what we found in our audience traffic numbers is they came to us, because I wasn't about to talk about infectious disease on air. I was never going to do that.
Thank you.
And we just talked about college football. It's a crazy business proposition, but we did it, and the thing is scaled probably beyond my wildest dreams. And we've had full support and buy-in from the folks over at CBS and 24/7, and I know how rare a commodity that is. And I think probably what I take the most pride in is because we've proven to be a successful product, I know other folks are going to get an opportunity now at multiple different places to do it this way, to do it on the digital media side. And it's been fun, man. It's been a load of fun. And when you have that wind in your sails, finally, it is, I mean, it's unlimited what you can do with it.
And Josh, it's one thing to do a show on YouTube. It's another thing to do what you're doing. I mean, I saw the other day you were down in Georgia talking to Kirby Smart. I mean, you talk to pretty much everybody who is anybody in the lane. And what is it because of?
Well, I'd let those guys speak for it. I know the feedback we get from coaches and the feedback on and off the record that I get from coaches is guys just appreciate when you're real.
Okay.
You don't have to carry water for them. I have an appreciation and respect for what they do, mainly the unseen parts of what they do and deal with. But if you're moving the needle audience-wise and you're real, I have not gotten a ton of pushback when we criticize coaches. Now, I'll have guys sometimes that'll hit us up and say, here's what I don't think you're seeing on this. But it's always, we appreciate you being fair about it. Let us know if you need anything. And so, you know, we're about to go on a spring tour here where, Paul, I'll probably hit 10 to 15 different campuses, and we'll do some live shows on the road with Late Kick. But also, just as you know, it's invaluable getting that one-on-one time with head coaches and coordinators and ADs this time of year, because that has been so invaluable in helping me understand beneath the surface what's going on in the world of college football, not just the sport of college football.
Because one thing about these coaches, I mean, they do not spend a lot of time doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really... forget where I work. I mean, this is part of the process, but I don't see them doing what they're doing with you with anyone else.
I think there's a respect factor there, and I think guys are way more guarded today. Everyone's scared of saying the wrong thing, and I think if you've gained their trust, if you gain a coach's trust, and they understand that the guy's not coming down here to back me into a corner. Okay. That's one thing. I mean, you know better, 10 times better than I do, what it feels like when a guest is at ease with you. I'm at ease with you right now. Imagine having head coaches like that around you. But also, they understand from a recruiting standpoint. We've got a massive 18 to 34-year-old demographic on my show. I mean, young people are watching the show. The messaging gets out. So there is certainly a self-focused aspect of that. But look, some of these guys get demonized. I mean, I think by and large, most of them want what's best for the game. There may be some selfish interest there as well, but they want what's best for the game. I certainly want that. I mean, I grew up loving this. I cannot imagine having to work a normal job. I mean, when you get paid to talk about college football, that's as good as it gets if you love what I love. But I think a lot of those guys feel the same way. And I think if you can get them to trust you and get them relaxed and understand, hey, not every question has sharp, pointy spears at both ends of it, they're happy to work with you.
Finally, on that part of the industry, because, I mean, we're on linear television here. It's everyone is so used to doing what they've always done, but you know it better than I do or anyone. I mean, there is so much money being made in the space you're in. Explain that to the rest of us lay people.
Well, I did not understand that dynamic probably I've learned more in the last 2 years about that than I knew in my entire life combined. I'll tell you, Shannon Terry did a really, really good job of kind of coaching me when I first got to 24/7.
And Shannon Terry, who we have talked to here before, he is, I mean, nobody has done what he has done
right.
in the industry. I mean, he's done it now at his third place.
Mm-hmm. And so you try and gravitate towards people like that. They've forgotten more than you know about what we're talking about. But I'll tell you, dealing with third-party ad agencies, dealing with major clients. Academy Sports and Outdoors is really big at the SEC tournament. They have been my presenting sponsor on Late Kick for a while, full disclosure. To deal with those folks and to understand, hey, there's a forward-thinking nature in this sales department, and to understand that they have their eyeballs everywhere and they're watching audience trends and patterns, then, Paul, it's just up to you to put a good product out there. I mean, the first thing you've got to do, as a former news director of mine once told me, build your tribe. You build that tribe, then a lot of that stuff becomes rudimentary and fundamental. But there's been a little paradigm shift in where the money goes in this industry. I think it pales in comparison to where it'll be 5 years from now.
Right. So looking into the crystal ball, which we do every day, what do you think it will look like based on everything you know and everything you have lived through and experienced?
I think the tail will wag the dog at that point in terms of where the juice is. In this particular sector, I'm not about to sit here and try and explain things outside of the sports media industry, because I barely explain them inside the sports media industry, but the data that we get is incontrovertible on where people are going, where viewership is going. It's not just the 18 to 34. I mean, the 34 to 65 is not an official Nielsen tracked metric, but it's one that we follow really closely.
Right.
Paul, they haven't left Legacy, but they are alternately viewing different ways than they would have even 5 years ago. It's really crazy to look at some of the graphing and some of the trafficking. At the end of the day, as the knowledge of how to work platforms is more readily saturated into the viewership market, people will find the content they want to find where it is. It has to be visible. It has to be well supported and well produced. And thankfully, we are blessed to be that with the CBS backing that we have. But I think another 5 years, I mean, you can look over at ESPN right now, and you can look at what some guys, some very prominent names are doing, not just on the legacy platforms, but on the alternate and on the digital. Right now, you still view those as alternate. I don't think 5 years from now we're viewing those as alternate. I think those televisions are still in homes, but by and large, you're going here, and if that's where if what I want's there, then I don't need to go anywhere else. And I think that's where the big names will be.
No, it's amazing, because when I talk to college kids every weekend on a campus, I mean, you ask them anecdotally, like, well, what do you watch? And they say, we don't watch. I'm talking about conventional television.
Yeah. I'll tell you the other thing. It's a whole nother diatribe, but the concept of how competition works in this space is so misconstrued. There was once upon a time, you lived in this world, where it was a time slot world.
Right.
There was no on demand. And if you had a 3-7 and I had a 3-7, we are fighting to the death for every listener, because there is no podcast replay. There's no on-demand. There's no DVR. There's nothing. They got to catch you live or they don't catch you. You fast forward 30 years, and most of my audience watches the replay of the show. They don't even catch the show live. It is built to be at their convenience that night, but also the next morning. And so the point is that Paul Feinbaum and Josh Pater on at the same time. They'll watch you live. They'll watch me replay or vice versa. But the high tide that you see raise all boats indicates that your competition's not the other guy with the microphone. The competition may be pulling the audience over to where you are in mass, and also just competing against the standard. Some of the same stuff we heard Saban say for 20 years at Alabama, the same mentality you should have when you're trying to build and sustain content in our space.
Josh Pate, incredible. Thank you so much. I'm really glad we were able to dig deep.
I appreciate you having me.
It is such a pleasure. We'll take a short break. We still have a long way to go here. We're live in Nashville. We're right back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hey, welcome back here. We're getting late on a Friday afternoon, and the big story of this day, the Tennessee Vols went down, South Carolina getting blown out by Auburn. Wes Rucker and Mike Wilson joining us. They cover Tennessee, and this is not exactly how we predicted it. Good to have both of you here. Mike, thanks for joining us. We know we've known Wes a long time. What happened today?
This could have been an email, I guess. It was kind of the performance from Tennessee. Not the one that any of us expected. I mean, I thought Auburn would win this tournament. I'm feeling okay about that prediction, but thought Tennessee would win today, at least. And even if Tennessee didn't win, if it was a certain kind of game, that's understandable. What happened today, though, not good, Paul. Really, really not good.
Yeah, surprising. I think Tennessee hasn't no-showed quite like that this year. Yeah. They've been hit. They've responded. They've had bad first halves. They've come back. There was none of that today. It was kind of the first time this season that this team hasn't weathered that storm, so to speak.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just kind of here keeping my eye on it, and I thought, yeah, they'll come back. And then I'm like, going, no, they're not. This is, it was really much worse than even the score, which was still pretty bad.
Yeah, even early on, I think State did all that damage in the first half and was up by so much, and I think was like 1 of 3 or 2 of 5 or something from three. And so it could have been worse. In the way Tennessee, like you said, they've fought back. They've been in these holes. Even at the Dean Dome when it was sold out and rocking there, they've been in some tough spots where things have not gone their way, and they have fought back. And we saw signs of that today, like a little 10-0 run, a 9-2 run. State answered every single one of them. That was the better team today, and it won the game.
Mike, not to be an alarmist as a Tennessee fan, but the Kentucky game lasted. They were down, came back, but they were still way down. Obviously, they were down almost the entire game here. What should we read into that?
Yeah, I mean, I think they went different ways, obviously. Kentucky was three-pointers. I mean, hot three-pointers, 52%, made 15 of them. This was Tennessee, I think, getting more exploited for its weaknesses. Mississippi State did some similar things in Starkville. They match up with Tennessee in an interesting way on the inside. They're long, they're old, they're physical. That's where Tennessee struggled a little bit with the Jonas Adu, Tobe Awaka interior presence. And Mississippi State in the first half absolutely dominated at the rim and at the paint. That's more of the concern to me than what Kentucky did. Because I'm not so concerned that teams are going to shoot that way as much as I am a team with a good big could give Tennessee problems.
A lot of teams, Wes, have gotten knocked out of this tournament and somehow survived and done really well. But March has been a rather tough time for Rick Barnes, and I know that's being mentioned early and often right now in Knoxville and in other places. Is that an overreach, or does it, we just have to wait? And because this is a team that a lot of folks had going to the Final Four.
Yeah, this is a huge couple of weeks for not just this team, but this program, this coaching staff. I think, Paul, if things don't go well the next couple of weeks, the if not now, then when question right. will absolutely be there, because we've seen this season. We've seen this Tennessee team. If you watch college basketball all season long, there's three teams probably better than everybody else. Then there's a group of about 10 teams that are right there. Tennessee's right there. Tennessee has been the best team in this league this season, and it was a good league. But you get the whole regular season Rick thing. You get the whole it becomes complicated because this team is an old team. This team is going to lose some pieces. This team's got one of the best scorers, maybe the best scorer in college basketball. A guy airdropped in perfectly to cover the deficiencies of this team. And it's now. The time is now, and it's a huge couple weeks.
With Mike Wilson and Wes Rucker. Mike, the question I have isn't what happened today. It's really what does it mean now to Sunday? A committee sitting there watching this, it seems pretty obvious. They're probably moving down. Where do you think they end up?
Yeah, I think it's a 2 seed at this point. I think today definitely surrendered that 1 seed possibility. North Carolina probably ends up taking that because I think they're going to roll through the ACC tournament. So you're probably looking at that two in the South in Dallas, maybe the two in the Midwest in Detroit. I think you want to avoid being the two in the East with UConn. I do think that's the best team out there right now. But, yeah, I think Tennessee probably falls into that two spot in one of those two regions.
I mean, you could look at it in long form and say, well, it doesn't matter at some point in a regional, but the one seed is a tremendous advantage.
Well, sure. I mean, you look at historically. I mean, I was talking to Mike about this a couple weeks ago, and he might know this number. The percentage of one seeds that get to the Final Four historically, significantly greater than the number twos who get there. Now, every year it's its own year. Every bracket's its own thing. And the thing never breaks out the way you think it might, right? Like last season, Tennessee beats Duke, and you think that thing's opened up all of a sudden, right? And then they run to FAU, and it goes the way that it goes. But I would think you want to avoid, you want to be in the West if you could be. You'd be begging for that number two spot out West. Looks like Arizona would probably get that now. So now you're probably going through one of the three big boys.
Yeah, so you would think that. Are you now the fifth school, or do you fifth seed overall, or do you move down even more than that? Because then it becomes a little more problematic.
They could fall to the six. I mean, they could be the six overall. Arizona could be that five overall, depending on what they do in the Pac-12. But I think to build on what Wes is saying, being a one seed this year was paramount, given that the other three number one seeds are so good.
Right.
You really wanted to be in that fourth spot to avoid seeing any of those teams until potentially in Phoenix at the Final Four. Tennessee squandered that chance today, so now their battle to get to Phoenix is a lot harder.
And this is a program that is so good that where some places they're going, okay, we had a good week here, good run. I mean, this program is it fair to say they expected to get to the Final Four?
It absolutely is fair. I mean, maybe there's some people in the back of their minds, that whole battered Vol syndrome thing of thinking, oh no, what's going to go wrong? But yeah, I mean, there are programs historically that are not nearly as good as Tennessee as a basketball program that have been to at least one Final Four. Tennessee has never been there. It is one of the most amazing stats in college sports that
Auburn, South Carolina, playing right now, or two of them.
It's unbelievable. Some of the teams that you think have gone in there and done that, the Masons and other teams, you're like, how did this happen? It's never happened for Tennessee, and some legendary players have played at Tennessee. I think only Kentucky's got more SEC Players of the Year in the history of the league. So it's... This was a time. This is still a time. Now, Paul, they can make everybody forget this. Yeah. If they go on a run the next couple weeks, this didn't happen, right? Don't remember. What are you talking about? What tournament? But if it doesn't go right, it's bad.
But I'll be a pessimist. Maybe that's just who I am. But I don't know how you can find good in this today.
There's none. a couple of the guys kept playing hard.
Yeah,
I mean, nobody got hurt.
But I've seen schools that come in here, let's get out of here. I mean, they don't want anything to do with it. But this one hurt because what Mike said. I mean, you lost the number one seed you were probably going to have. It puts you, at some point you're going to have to play the best, but it's just a more problematic situation. I'll say it over and over again, but you can't stress it enough.
They keep putting themselves in situations to do special things, and then when they get there, the special things are not happening. That doesn't mean it's not going to happen, but it hasn't happened yet. That cannot be argued. It has not happened yet. They need to go do something in the big tournament. They need to. And it's if not now, then when? That's a fair question. You don't want to ask it because you're talking about a Hall of Fame coach. You're talking about a guy who everyone in this sport respects, borderline reveres.
Right.
But you got to get it done. You really do when it counts. People remember March. They remember April.
Talking to Wes Rucker and Mike Wilson, finally, we'll wait Sunday. We'll see what happens. But in just trying to, you can't sum up the season until you know, but how much of this year or is it all going to be laid on where this team, what this team does in the tournament?
I mean, as Wes said, at the end of the day, that's what's going to be remembered about this team, because this is the best chance that Rick Barnes has had at Tennessee to go to a Final Four. I think this team is better built for that than the Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield team.
That was an amazing team.
Amazing team, different team. Better offensively, not great defensively. They didn't have a Dalton Connect at guard. They didn't have a Zakai Ziegler level point guard. So I think those guys give this team an opportunity in March that that team did not have. So this is that best opportunity. You made it harder on yourselves today with this loss. You're going to bring doubters out today with this loss. Can you fix it in the next week or not? That's kind of going to be the question, because I think the concern to me was players saying we weren't desperate today and Mississippi State was. If you're not desperate in March, are you built for it or not?
And you could argue that's not even accurate, because it seemed like Mississippi State was in really good shape anyway.
They were.
With the win yesterday.
They are. But they are a good matchup for them for right. Tennessee. Like, even, you know, the coach said that today. He said, listen, everyone in this league knows how good Tennessee is, but we feel like we're a pretty good matchup right. for them. And we've beaten them before, so we know we can do that. But they, when they need a place today, they got them. And I don't want to get away from crediting the winner of any game ever. You have to give credit, I think, to the team that outplayed the other team. But if you're asking a coach out there, any of them, which of those rosters would you rather have? Which team would you rather have? There's only one answer, and it's Tennessee.
Well,
and
we're not overdoing it, because through 3 days of this tournament, and there's still two more games tonight, this is the story. And there's not a second place.
No, I think you've kind of hit it
on
the head there.
There was only one. Only if Kentucky lost tonight would we at least have some competition. But even that wouldn't compare to what we saw.
The National Chamber of Commerce has got to be hoping like hell that doesn't happen, Paul. If they lose the orange and then they lose the blue, this is a bad beat.
Yeah, no. Orange, anyway. Hate to do it, but we had to, because that's all you're going to be talking about and hearing about and writing about. Yeah. Wes Rucker and Mike Wilson from 24/7 and the Knoxville News. Great to have both of you here. We'll take a short break. We'll get to your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And the first of many. How about Mizzou tomorrow, early spring game, 2 p.m. Eastern. Yeah, let's get to a couple of phone calls. We have two winners already today. Tennessee, we mentioned, going down in rather convincing fashion. And the second game is in the books. Auburn with a 31-point win over South Carolina. Rather disappointing ending of this part of the season for South Carolina, who had a great season. Lamont Parrish, the coach of the year, but they'll be playing next week, of course. Let's get to the calls, and Davis is up next in Wisconsin. Hello, Davis.
Yes, G/D father, Bruce Pearl's team.
Good afternoon.
Versus Mississippi State tomorrow at high noon, Gary Cooper time. I wonder what Ricky thinks. What do you think or believe?
Well, I think it's phenomenal. Regardless of what happened today, it just shows you why it's so good. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Don is up next in Kentucky. Hey, Don.
Hello. How you doing?
We are doing great. Thank you.
I'm still here.
Yeah, go right ahead, Don. You're on the air.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm over 87. I've been a Kentucky a basketball fan first, and a Kentucky fan for a little bit over 70 years now. Watched a lot of teams, a lot of great players come in and out at Kentucky. And I believe Reed Shepherd may be the most accomplished player that I could ever remember coming in with his total game. And no one put any pressure on the young man. We expected him to be good, but I think most of us thought, well, it'll be another year or so. He's come on really great. But I love this team from, you know, all the players on it, and just hope that they play really well. I'd love for us to have a good my first date, by the way, with my wife, Pat, was March the 22nd, 1958, in Louisville Freedom Hall, the night UK's Fiddlin' Five won the national championship over at the Seattle Chieftains.
That was our first date. Oh, that is amazing. Wow, what a memory. That was Coach Rupp, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. So when I went to UK...
What a great memory to your wife. Hey, thank you so much, Don, for for sharing your story with us, and all the very, very best. You be well. I hope we can talk again. Toby is up next. Toby, you're on the air. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, man?
We're doing fantastic. Thanks for the call.
Hey, Paul, I wanted to respond to a caller earlier, right before your interview with Josh. He was talking about D1 athletes and why they get paid and everything is for free. Well, there's a big misconception that everything is free. I am a parent of a D1 athlete who just recently graduated and now is a grad transfer to another school. He plays football, and in the event that he gets hurt or got hurt, the first thing the school does is ask the parents if they have insurance, yada, yada, yada. Yes, there are D1 athletes who want for nothing, but for the multitude, for a bigger bunch of D1 athletes, they're struggling. They're struggling to make ends meet. Yes, school is free. Yes, they get some type of housing.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.